If there's one thing everyone can agree on, it's that finances can be confusing, especially when you're trying to make sure your career, family life, and everything in between is taken care of. Trust me, I'm right there with you. Whether you're a seasoned investor, a budgeting newbie, or just someone looking to supercharge your financial future in about 15 minutes, this is for you. If you're ready to make your money work harder for you, and if you're ready to spark true financial independence, then you've come to the right place. I'm Teresa Arago, and this is Talking Sense. Money can be controversial in general. So today on Talking Sense, I've got Alec Darrell with me. We are going to talk about controversial money advice. And we're not going to get too salacious, but we're going to stick with some that our clients have asked us about, where we've had to kind of talk through things in the meeting room to help you guys see the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever you decide, of these topics. And we're going to start out strong with whether couples should combine their finances or not. And understand, we're talking mathematically. Every family is different. Don't come at me in the comments. Every family is different. But when you look at the math, what does it tell us about combining your finances for couples?
Well, we have a lot of clients come in, and we have clients that combine their finances, clients who do it all separate. And from what I've seen, the ones who combine them, typically things go a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Like, both income hits one bank account. Whoever's money is whose, whatever they make, it's both their money. It's not split up. So statistically, and from what I have seen, that typically is the better way to go. Now, I'm not married. You're married. What do you think?
So just like our kids, we kind of have his, mine, and ours. Only because there was an account for a while. Let me say we've merged now. But there was a time where when we first got married, he had an old account from when he was single. I had an old account from when I was single. We had a joint account. What was funny is, though, there was nothing in the single accounts. We didn't keep any money in there. It just existed because it was just out of habit to have it. Or, like, for me, I think I had one bill that was still going out of there that took me forever. And so we went ahead and combined them eventually. But what I have found in the meeting room is those that have combined their assets tend to just have more unity on their financial journey in general. I think it's really hard to chase a goal as a team if you're all running different directions, if you have different agendas. And that's the challenge. It's not really the combining of the assets that I think is the key. I think it's what's underneath that. If you're not both working towards the same goals, there's going to be tension. If you don't see the money as ours, and even in a joint account, that can happen. There's times where I'm like, man, I can't believe Joey did that thing, like went to lunch with the guys or whatever, and da da da. And then I go and waste money on something myself, which I don't mind when it's me, of course. But it's that unity. If you have one household budget and one goal, then it allows you to move efficiently.
Yeah. There's no secrets with it either. Everything is together. You know exactly what is going into the bank account and what's being spent, instead of, you know, maybe you got one person who's a spender, one who's a saver, and the saver could be like, are you saving? And the spender's like, yep, I'm saving. But they really don't know, and they could be doing whatever. So having it together is really important. And like you said, there are goals that they want to achieve. That's buying a house, saving for a car. Both of you are seeing what the other is doing and can keep each other accountable.
Yes. And I think one thing that can help assuage the concerns of feeling like you're held to something, that, especially if you're the spender and you're feeling like you're being tightened up on or whatever, you can have in the budget fund money. You can put whatever categories you want into the budget. So like with my husband and I, we talked about, you know, there's a certain amount that he can spend where he doesn't have to consult me. We don't have to have a conversation about it. It is whatever he wants out of that. Or at one point we would just each carry a little bit of cash, and that was our fun money. We could do whatever we wanted with it. Nobody cared because it wasn't going to hurt the budget. But that's part of the conversation that has to be done. It's like, if you know that you can turn a nickel into two dimes, then you need to give some breathing room to your spender who's in your life, because they always marry each other. I don't know why we do this to ourselves. It's probably good, balances us out. But let that person have that moment. There was a couple I work with, and hopefully they won't get mad at me for sharing the story, but the wife had wanted a couch for almost 3 years. They had plenty in cash to buy the couch, but the price of the couch was just killing the other spouse. And so finally at one of the reviews, I said, hey, can you just get her the couch? Please, you guys, this has created tension for 3 years. Is it really worth the tension? He loves the couch. They got the couch. He loves the couch. Everybody's happy. So you know, find those balances that can help you both have unity, joint goals, but also still breathe so that you can make it work. Just like when you're dating. I mean, you can't always get your way, right?
Mm-hmm.
For you and Maddie to stay together, you got to give a little, right? It's the same when it comes to your financial journey. And I think that lack of kind of being able to let things go, maybe it's ego, I don't know what it is, sharing the responsibility and sharing the joy, that's what makes it work, in my opinion. I think it's the deeper issue than just combining your accounts. But like you said before, having, you know, one budget, joint credit card accounts where everybody knows what's going on, joint savings, that really helps you guys both stay on track. Next one we're going to get into is eating out versus cooking. And this one, y'all, it's going to be hard for me because I read this in preparation for today and I wanted to cry a little bit because I'm in the midst of kids in sports. Like, I've had more concession stand food in the last month than I care to acknowledge, and it shows. But it is true. We all know it. Go on, break our hearts.
Well, concession stand food is cheap, so that's,
well,
that's one thing.
It depends on which games I'm at. One of the schools, they're reasonable. One of the other schools, not so much.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, eating out versus cooking, cooking is going to win on the financial level, the health level. It's going to win on a lot of different levels, but mm-hmm. on the financial side, I mean, it's all in the numbers. You spend a lot more money eating out, especially mm-hmm. if you do it every day. If the average price of eating at home is about $5, but the average price of eating at a restaurant, it's an inexpensive restaurant, is about yes. 15.
Yeah, I recently was paying attention because, you know, we were having to eat out. We were out of town, and my son said something about eating at, like, Tropical Smoothie. And I was like, oh, it's so expensive there. And I started thinking, I was like, no, I pay the same amount at McDonald's as I would at Tropical Smoothie.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten that high. I was going to say atrocious because that's the first word that came to mind. Eating out has gotten that expensive that it genuinely doesn't matter much where you go. You're spending a lot.
Yeah. I miss those $5 footlong Subway commercials. That will never happen again.
I forgot about
that. They're going to be like $10 footlongs. They may be $10 right now, but
oh my word.
You
probably
won't see it in a song or a commercial.
Well, and then you add chips and a drink and it's toast. And I teased about my husband eating out. That's the thing that gets us every time, because my husband can eat a volume of food that would make you be quite impressed. And so for him to just go out to eat, like, I can go to Wendy's and get the little 5 for $4. I'm not going to feel great afterwards, but it'll fill me up. He's going to get the bougie drink and a dessert and a snack. Like, he's going to end up spending $10, $15 at Wendy's. And so that's why I always tease him about eating out. So sorry, honey, I love you. But let's talk about the cost of eating out for lunch instead of bringing your lunch to work. Okay. For a married couple, it's about a $400 a month difference. So eating out 5 days a week, married couple, $30 a day, 20 days times 30, $600 in 20 days versus eating at home, you're at like 200. That's a lot of money.
That is.
I never thought about that. It kind of made me cry when I read this.
it adds up. If you think about it over a year, it, mm-hmm. it can really add up. And it's, what could I do if I was throwing that money towards something else, towards savings, debt, retirement? Mm-hmm. And all it is, the only difference is driving to the store and cooking it yourself. Now, it's easier said than done, especially if you have kids. For me, being single, I'm like, yeah, it's a no-brainer. But
for me, it requires a lot of planning. What I used to do when I was a single mom and I was much more intentional is I would prep everything on Sunday so that during the week I was literally just throwing things in a pot. As opposed mm-hmm. to having to sit there and cut. And like, if I have to defrost meat, it's done. I will go buy new meat instead of defrosting meat I already have at home because of the time spent. It's so ridiculous. My husband says the freezer's where meat goes to die. And it's very true for our family. But I will say there are other things that you can do to tweak your spending that may not be more impactful. I mean, I had a client, I just thought of this a moment ago. He wanted a soda every single day. But he would go to the grocery store, the gas station, to pick it up every single day. And we were talking about changes, you know, they were struggling, things were tight. And I said, I'm not trying to take your Dr. Pepper away from you, but have you ever considered going and buying a pack at Sam's and keeping it at your office where you could just grab one, or keeping it at your house and bringing one a day? Mm-hmm. And he just looked at me like, oh my word, why did that not occur to me already? And he literally, when they came back for their review, he was like, I've been drinking my Dr. Peppers from home. And I was like, that's awesome. But you don't think about these little bitty things that can add up.
And another thing that can add up is paying interest on your loans. So mm-hmm. this is kind of controversial money advice, is paying cash for cars.
Yeah.
I know that Dave Ramsey talks about this a lot, and I also have friends or clients to come in, family members, who could also make the argument that financing is better than paying cash,
mm-hmm.
because they'll say there's stuff like, I can afford the monthly payment. And yes, you may be able to, but don't look at the monthly payment. Look at how much debt you're going into.
Yes.
And how long you're going to be paying that monthly payment. Because mm-hmm. you may be able to afford it now, but one, you may not be able to afford it later.
A lot can happen.
A lot can happen in a year, 5 years, however long the debt term is. And also, it's growing at a fast rate, depending on the interest rate, obviously. But some interest rates on credit cards, they can be very high, where it feels like you're just trying to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to take a $30,000 loan out at a 9.5% interest rate and you had a 5-year term, you'd be paying $7,800 just in interest over that 5 years.
That's a lot. I had a note. When I bought my Sienna, I was like, Millie was like 3 or 4 months old. So I was a little distracted when we were going through the finance office. And I remember about 6 months later, I got one of the, I was looking through the little book that you get for payments. You know, they always send you the book, not that you ever use it. And I noticed the interest rate we got. And then I noticed what the total loan was going to be, like how much interest we were going to pay if we kept it as is. And I was so frustrated with myself because I was distracted and not paying attention. And so I remember I started paying extra toward it immediately because I was like, I am not going to take forever to pay this off and pay all that interest. So what I started doing was kind of like the debt snowball. Anytime we had extra, I was making a principal payment. And then I added, I think it was like $50 a month was the we're going to pay this no matter what. And then I was paying extra so that I could get it paid off early because I didn't want to keep that. And it's the same for you. You know, if you have, whether it's credit cards or a car, which is what we're really talking about here, just because you have a 5-year payoff doesn't mean you have to take 5 years to pay it off. It would be really, really beneficial to you to consider putting extra towards it so that you can expedite that. And what I tell people is when you pay off a car, don't stop making the car payment. Just put it in savings. Because mm-hmm. then next time you can trade in your car plus your savings and maybe don't have to finance. You know, we were in a situation this year where we had to take on a car note for the first time in a few years. And it was kind of like, you know, but we did it because my son's car died and we needed another vehicle in the home. And I actually was looking at used cars originally. But I've learned a long time ago not to look at the payment because I was looking at two different cars. One was brand new. One was almost 10 years old. The monthly payment was only about $50 difference between the two because the interest rate was so much higher on the used car. I say that to say caution yourself about being laser beam focused on the payment amount and whether you can afford it. Yes, you want a payment that you can afford if you have to go into debt. But if you don't have to go into debt, why would you pay interest on something you can get without?
Yeah, and if you're looking at buying a new car, mm-hmm. one thing you can do to either lower that payment is put a bigger down payment down. And let's say you find a car and you find out the payment is $250 a month. Well, don't go buy that car today. See if you can make that payment for a year, mm-hmm. and that money goes into savings for the down payment. And then when you get to the point where you say, hey, I've got a good down payment, I'm ready to buy this car, you can put a down payment down. That payment is way cheaper and in the end, make it a lot easier to pay it off quicker. And yes, it won't constrain your budget as well.
And with some financing companies, if you have a down payment, it also lowers your interest. So that's something to consider too. You know, you mentioned something about putting money into savings and that made me think about trying to pay off debt before you have an emergency savings. Because I just talked about before, like pay extra. And then I thought, wait. Only do that if you're ready. If you don't have your emergency savings in place, at least $2,000, but preferably more, don't get yourself spread too thin. I did have a client call me once and they were like, hey, I want to get this car. It's going to cost me X number of dollars. If I pay it in cash, it will completely deplete my savings. And I said, nope, don't do it. I said, what's the bottom for the emergency savings that we've got to have? Okay, the rest of it can go as part of the down payment, but leave the rest there because you've got to have your safety net.
Yeah, you do. And if some people also say, well, I can't afford to put money back each month.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how much it is. Put the smallest amount possible if you have to. If you put back $25 a week, that's not eating out one or two times. Mm-hmm. Or like your friend who would or that client who would buy Dr. Peppers at the gas station, that could probably add up to about $15, $20 a week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a couple hundred, $300, $400 a month right there that you could be throwing into savings. So even if it's the smallest bit that you're throwing back towards emergency savings, I think that that's really important and it can really save you in the short term and long term.
Yeah, and I think whether you're buying a car or any other thing and you're considering financing it, you made a valid point earlier about make sure you can afford that payment by living with that much less for a few months first. Because I've done this to myself. I did it in college. I forgot about this story. I've told it before. It's kind of embarrassing. I was looking for a car. My car, I'd been in a wreck, so I had to get another car. And I found this car. It was going to be $355 a month. This is where I learned not to pay attention to just the payment. $355 a month. Well, I made $400 a month. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've got this. I make more than that. I needed gas. I needed to pay insurance. Like, I did not think of any of these other things. And I ended up having to pick up a second job just to make it work. So I know that it's hard to delay gratification sometimes. And in some cases, you truly may not have the time to do that. Like in the case of your car completely dying on you. But you don't have to get your dream car. You can get what you know you can afford for now, pay it off, continue making those savings payments to yourself, and then go buy it when you've got the money to do it.
Well, I'll go ahead and give my two cents for today's podcast. My two cents are that we hear a lot of controversial advice from anyone who's around us, friends, family, but every advice that you hear is different. And it could be very broad advice. There's certain things that may be good for you, may be good for someone else, or is maybe good for nobody.
Yeah, so, see, there's something that's not good for anybody.
Yeah, agreed. So I think that making sure the advice is suitable for you is very important and be able to filter out that advice that's good and bad.
And if you're looking for a starting point, we do have some tips that may help you. We've got this thing that you can download. It's a little printout that can help you understand some basic financial concepts. It's called the 6 Keys to Financial Independence. You can get it by going to getreadyforthefuture.com/keys, or you can text the word keys to 501-381-5228. And if you're telling yourself, man, I would really just like some personalized advice, some advice that doesn't really apply to everybody else, but certainly applies to me, you can get that by connecting with one of our Gem Wealth financial advisors, and you can reach us by calling 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526, or you can email us at info@getreadyforthefuture.com. Thank you guys so much for joining us today on Talking Sense. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Maybe we've helped you solve a little bit of the controversy in your own home, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening to Talking Sense. And if you like what you hear, make sure and subscribe to the podcast to get all the newest episodes. The Gem Wealth team is available to you 24/7 at info@getreadyforthefuture.com or by calling our offices at 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. And while we like to have fun here, we're also financial advisors, and that means disclosures. You should personally consult a financial advisor before making any investment, and no strategy can assure success. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advice offered through Independent Advisor Alliance. Independent Advisor Alliance and Gem Wealth Financial Advisors are separate entities from LPL Financial.